reaching the apathetic and disinterested. Because sometimes when we share our faith, we are not met with the pushbacks that sometimes happens, or particularly happened, I suppose, a few years ago, when people might respond to you and they hear a Christian, well, the Bible's full of contradictions, or those sorts of pushbacks, or I believe in science, not in God. I've got a friend who, when she sees spiritual conversation coming over the horizon and it's coming into view, she will find a way of just abruptly changing the conversation. I remember sitting recently, and then it was coming near, and she could see the God question coming, to which she said, "So are you going away on holiday anywhere this year?" And abruptly changed the conversation so that we couldn't go anywhere near questions of faith. And sometimes when you try and share your faith, people look about this interested. This chap here doesn't look particularly inspiring. Have you ever met a face like that? When you are trying to share the thing that matters most to you, and not just the thing that matters most to you, but the thing that matters most in the whole world about salvation in Christ and the grace of God, and you get, you know, where do you go with that? You know, if someone comes back with, you know, real kind of opposition, or they come back with specific objections, or they're a member of another faith group, you've got something to engage with. But when you get this kind of blancmange-faced kind of blah, what do you do with that? Where do you respond? You know, the Oxford English Dictionary has recently added this word to the OED, meh. You come across that? We're meh. It's kind of a teenage word that means what you've just said isn't even worth me responding properly to. It's apparently defined as the verbal equivalent of a shrug of the shoulders. Meh. And this is sometimes the attitude we get, not hostility, not pushback, not deliberate sort of like objections. I don't believe in your God because of these three reasons. Just, I can't even engage. It's utter bored indifference. You know, I remember saying to a teenager, hurry up, you're keeping them waiting. What was the response? Nah. This doesn't have any bearing on me. It doesn't grip my world or my imagination at all. Nah. And that means that the Christian ends up looking about this excited as well. They're disillusioned, they're not interested, and we can end up disillusioned in our attempts to share our faith as well. The meh kind of spills over into a bit of Christian disillusionment. So what do we do? Where do you go when you meet the dreaded meh in conversation? I think we need to think about why people say that. I think the first is sometimes people just don't think the Christian faith is relevant at all. You know, there's genuine apathy. Some people just cannot see the relevance of the Christian faith. They may be thinking, well, I don't know how to pay my bills. I'm facing a cost of living crisis, and you want to talk about atonement for salvation. What? They cannot see the relevance of what we're talking about for the daily struggles of life. Other people just think there are no answers to spiritual questions. You know, they're sort of lost in a world of agnosticism. Postmodernism has eaten away any kind of sense that there might be answers that the human mind can reliably discover. So they just think it's just not worth talking about at all. You get people who are genuinely apathetic. Then you get people who present as apathetic, but actually, underneath that, they're quite nervous about where the conversation might go. And so they present as apathetic, even though underneath they've got intrigue and all sorts of questions, but they don't want to go there because they might sense that it might disrupt their lives. Or it might be difficult, it might open a can of worms. They're not sure where that conversation might lead. And so they don't go there because it feels slightly threatening. So they put up a wall of just, meh, just sludge. I'm not going to engage with this at all. And then you meet other people who they present as apathetic, but they're kind of worried that they don't want to offend you. I've got one friend who doesn't want to go there because she disagrees with me profoundly and doesn't want to open up a discussion because she wants to value our friendship. So it's easier for her just to say, I don't care, I'm not interested, I don't want to know. So for all sorts of reasons, you share your faith, you ask questions, you're really passionate about wanting to share Jesus, and you end up in a conversational cul-de-sac. What can you do? One of the authors of Have You Ever Wondered, our friend Michael Ott, had a situation like this. He was on a campus when he encountered the dreaded meh. The dreaded meh came up. He had preached his heart out on evidence for the resurrection. And he went around the tables of the students and he said to them, what did you think? And this girl said to him, I'm not interested. And he was like, how can you not be interested? If Jesus rose from the dead, you got to follow him. I mean, my dad became a Christian on a Crusaders hill-walking holiday in the Cairngorms in 1956. And what clinched it for him was the evidence of the resurrection of Jesus, and particularly the testimony of the apostles. And he said, when I was persuaded that Jesus rose from the dead, I would follow him at any cost. It all flew, you know, came into place, because he was kind of in a modern mindset. But so many people today say, well, I don't care. It doesn't interest me. Now, how did Michael respond? Because I would have been really frustrated. I would have done one of two things. I would have sort of got really cross and said, how can you not care if Jesus rose from the dead? What's wrong with you? And pushed the person away with a bit of my own frustration. Or I would have just accepted the answer passively and said, okay, thanks for coming, and scuttled away. But Michael is a much wiser man than me, and he responded with a question. He didn't accept that conversational cul-de-sac. He said, oh, that's a shame. What are you into? Good question. And she says, well, I'm into love. I'm into love. Isn't that lovely? I'm into love. And then he started to ask her what she thought love was. Now, it turned out a few minutes later that she had absolutely no idea what love really was. They explored that and teased around what her view of love was. It went nowhere. And then eventually she says to Michael, so what do you think love is? And now they're on gospel territory and she's listening. Because then he starts to talk about a God who is love. You get to places when you explore that conversation, like, you know, what is love? Not that we love God, but he loved us and gave his son as an atoning sacrifice. That's where you go. Jesus says, no greater love has any man than this, that he lays down his life for his friends. The what is love question is a gospel question. And Michael took her there with a question that started with what she was interested in and where her worldview led her into a complete cul-de-sac. He found a meh bypass by asking about what she cared about. But it wasn't the only occasion it happened to him. He told me he was on a long train journey with a passionate environmental scientist. And this environmentalist was working away in his laptop and doing reports and all sorts of stuff. And they spent hours talking about the care of the environment. And Michael is a keen outdoorsman. He spends a lot of time in the hills, very interested in ecology. And they discussed it for hours and hours and hours. And Michael was really keen to share something of his faith in Christ with this man and was looking for a way in. And he knew that if he sort of bluntly said, do you want to talk about God? It would be an absolute no. So he's looking for a bridge from the conversation they were in towards the things that really matter. So he said to this man, why does that matter to you? And this man said, well, I don't know really, I've never really thought about it. It just seems like the right thing to sort of do, to care about the environment. And then he says to Michael, but you clearly care about it, why? To which he says, well, actually it's because of my Christian faith. I don't think that this world is just evolved out of nothing, has no purpose, has no meaning, and is going nowhere, and will one day burn up into the sun for no purpose. I believe it's been made by God, who's entrusted it to us, and we're accountable to him for what we do. Now they're onto gospel territory, starting with what the man cared passionately about. And it would have got nowhere if he'd started with a completely blunt question. The key in all these things is to begin with the person, not accepting their apathy. Equally, not just pushing our agenda. If our agenda is, I want this person to come to Christianity Explored on Friday night and I'm going to doggedly go at that no matter what without listening to them, you won't get anywhere. You'll be met with the dreaded nah. If they are completely disinterested in four good arguments for the reliability of Scripture, begin with them. Find out what drives them. Find out what matters to them, first of all, and take a genuine interest in them. People are made in the image of God. People are extraordinarily interesting. They have lives, they have stories, they have characters. Find out and take a genuine, not just a kind of a using it as a tool. Take a genuine interest in people and what drives them. People made in the image of God are infinitely interesting. Ask questions, explore their worldview, and then relate the gospel to that. That's what we've sought to do in the Have You Ever Wondered book, relating the gospel to things like money, beauty, purpose, identity, good and evil, justice, different religions, can we change, maths and music, and use these things as a bridge towards the gospel. One of the things we can use when we explore people's worldviews and wanting to draw them from where they are towards the gospel is values. Because many, many people share values which are deeply biblical. It's part of common grace, part of being made in God's image. Yes, distorted and marred and wrecked by the fall, but still lurking in there are these elements of common grace that we can draw on, where they have interesting values that they respond. There's all sorts of them. We explore lots of them in the book. Love, justice, beauty, rights, pain and suffering, environment, hope, or altruism. All interesting things that people respect, which have got a gospel story to tell. We could choose any of them. Let's just choose one. Let's think about altruism. Doing good for others at cost to yourself. Andy tells a really good story in the book about a man called Billy McFadden, who gets given a Victoria Cross for his role in the First World War. What happens is they're in the trenches, and a box of grenades is brought in to resupply the trench. And Billy notices that a pin falls out of one of the grenades as it's brought into the trench. And it's set down, and he realizes in 3 seconds the whole box is going to blow up and kill everybody. So Billy dives on top of the box and absorbs all the shrapnel and all the grenades. He, of course, is killed, and all his comrades survive. And he is given a posthumous Victoria Cross, the highest military honor. And people respect Billy McFadden to this day because he laid down his life for others. Now, why? It's a very interesting question. It's a similar question. A few years ago, The Guardian, not a traditionally Christian-friendly newspaper, ran a story celebrating the engineers on the Titanic, who stayed on the Titanic, running the engines in the bottom of the vessel to keep the engines running, to keep the radio working and the lights on, to facilitate the rescue of as many people as possible. And they went down with the ship. They gave their lives so that others could live. And they were lauded in The Guardian newspaper as examples of what great humanity looked like. And the question is, why? Because if mindless evolution is the only game in town, they're not heroes, they are fools. Because if survival of the fittest is literally all we are here for, then they're idiots, because they should have taken their selfish genes off the boat. But they gave up their lives for others, and something, even in The Guardian, recognizes that that is true and good and beautiful. Now, why? Because we instinctively understand that there's more to human life than the survival of the fittest. We understand that evolution cannot provide a full experience or explanation of why we are here or what we're here for or the value of human life. In fact, they are fools, these people that we laud, if evolution is the only game in town. But if we are made in the image of a God who is love, and greater love has no man than this, and he lays down his life for his friends, then these people are great because they look like the greatest story of all. And that's why we instinctively see that altruism is better than selfishness, and why we all despise a selfish person. A selfish person might be just living the evolutionary way, but we don't think that. We laud our heroes. Values can be a wonderful gospel bridge if we start with what really matters to the people we talk to. Another thing that can be a really interesting way in when you meet the dreaded wall of meh and you can't get past into a good conversation is to find shared interests with people and use those as a gospel bridge. I'll never forget a chap who came to our church when I was a kid. He was known as the T-shirt evangelist. And the T-shirt evangelist, he used to commute into Marylebone Station in London every day, and he tried to do evangelism by having gospel texts on his T-shirt to try and provoke conversation. And he got really disillusioned because nobody ever spoke to him. He got the dreaded meh. Everybody looked at his T-shirt and looked the other way. He got nowhere, the T-shirt evangelist, so he gave up. And he was really disillusioned and upset. That day, he just put on another T-shirt and went to work. He put on, it happened to be, a Harley-Davidson motorbike T-shirt, and the person sitting opposite him in the carriage was also a Harley rider, and they struck up conversations. And they chatted together all the way into Marylebone, and by the time they were pulling into London, they were talking about what mattered most. But the bridge was a shared interest. There was some backstory, like he hadn't been able to ride because he'd been ill, and there was some suffering, and how'd he cope with that? And that was their way segueing into the gospel, or some kind of backstory like that. But the connection was made through a shared interest. And again, you could do all sorts. I said motorbikes, but you could do music, books, films. I know someone who's joined their local book group because in the local book group, the people there would never come to church, but every month they are meeting and discussing literature. And every 6 months or something, she gets to select the book. And sometimes when they read a really bad book, it's really good because the gospel is such a good contrast to that. But she's in that shared interest of the world of literature. And that's her way into people who, if you knocked on their front door and said, come to church, it would be like our monkey at the beginning, just complete blank. But there is a way in through shared interests. Some of the best conversations I have are hill walking with non-Christian people. We're up in the mountains of Scotland, and you can chat over long periods of time through a shared interest. Let's pull one other out here. I've got the motorbike up there, but what about bands? Here's an interesting story, and I chose this one because it's local around here. I am, for good or for ill, a fan of the old Oldham 70s prog rock band Barclay James Harvest, which might mean something to some of you, and the rest of you are going, excellent. So, Barclay James Harvest, I discovered that they've got an online forum for their music fans. And do you know what they do? Every 2 weeks, they put up a track of the fortnight and they discuss it. And the music and the lyrics feature Jesus and spirituality and love and justice and beauty. And you get to comment on them. And there's been many opportunities there when I've been able to share the gospel with people who are just not interested in it otherwise. But in the context of a shared interest, they're up for a chat. Now I've found that there's a private message function on the forum too. And so many people have sent me messages saying, what about this? What about that? And then when we put the book out, I put a message in saying, I've written a book. I've been involved in putting a book together. It's about the Christian faith. Anybody want one? And I got some interesting responses, including someone from Bury. He used to run Bury Sports on Bolton Street. I don't know if you remember that shop. Used to have, I think, air guns upstairs, trophies downstairs, just along from the station there. And Alan said, yeah, I will read your book. So that came from a shared interest. And I know that if you knocked on his front door and said, would you read a Christian book, it would be an absolute definite no. But yet, values or shared interests can be a way of intriguing and showing the relevance of the gospel. Sometimes the front door to people's lives, hearts, and homes is locked like Fort Knox. It is impenetrable, double, triple locked, and you think, I'll never get through. So sometimes we're looking for a meh bypass, a way around the side. And have you ever one that is 28 examples of a way of intriguing people and showing them that within their hearts are things which link up with the gospel and actually make a side door, shared values and shared interests. People today are asking profound spiritual questions to which the Bible in general and the gospel in particular has the most profound and helpful answers, but they are almost entirely unaware of that. People don't know that the Bible answers the deepest questions of their hearts, like identity, who am I? What am I for? What's my purpose? What was I made for? What's life about? What am I worth? You know, we have this kind of crisis of people wondering what they're worth, or can I make a difference in the world? And they don't know that the Bible speaks deeply to these questions. So here is what we're suggesting. We can start with where people are and lead them towards Christ. But all of this, of course, assumes that we have conversations with people who aren't Christians, that we're not just on rotas in the church, that we are hanging out with publicans, tax collectors, and sinners like Jesus did. Because unless we're doing that, then it's all just nice theory. And then one final thing to mention to you, and when you're doing this, never give up. I had my hair cut this week. My barber, Campbell, the kilted barber in Perth, is now a Christian. Campbell, the kilted barber, did not used to be a Christian, and this is how it happened. A man came and sat in his chair to have his hair cut and said, Campbell, you should come to church with me. And Campbell said, meh, not interested. The next time he came to have his hair cut, the man said to him, Campbell, you should come to church with me, mate. And he said, meh. And it went on and on and on. And one day that man died. And Campbell said, I should probably go to his funeral. He was a good customer for over 20 years. And that is where he heard the gospel. And the man who did all that work never saw the fruit, but his faithfulness and his not giving up in the face of the dreaded meh.